Welcome to the Sounds of Success. Brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Now here's your host, Mark Graydon.
Welcome to the Sounds of Success. I'm Mark Graydon. This month, control of your classroom can be a major determining factor in whether people stay or drop out. And sometimes, keeping control may require punishing a student. How to handle this delicate situation is the focus of our discussion as we hear from clinical psychologist and black belt, Dr. Gia Rosenbaum. Before that, NAPMA member Gary Meyer from Wilmington, Massachusetts is here with some ideas of our favorite kind of marketing, and that is low-cost marketing. And we will also check in with Toby Milroy about his plans for your marketing for this month. But up first, I'm very excited to share with you the great lineup we have for you on the NAPMA Innovations DVD. This month, our NAPMA core curriculum segment focuses on how to create phenomenal retention. Mike Mertens operates Master Chung's world-class Taekwondo in Buffalo, New York. He has grown to 4 schools and thousands of students through a focused effort on retention. Growth can only be achieved through a consistent net gain of students. That means retention is just as important, if not more important, than enrollment to achieve your goals of consistent growth. In our Edge MMA segment this month, Ron Balicki and Diana Inosanto share with you some submission flow drills that teach vital grappling maneuvers. Flowing from one technique to another is taught so students learn to transition into position before going for the submission. Then, point and WCL champion Jason Tankson Borelli teaches techniques for winning point karate fighting. He teaches kicking and punching combinations that are designed for students and competitors with a need for speed. At NAPMA's Quantum Leap in the spring, a few brave souls volunteer first come, first serve to teach their favorite classroom training drills. The event is called the Quantum Leap Think Tank. Part 1 features a warm-up and stretching routine from Brazilian Capoeira with Gaspar Nicol from Gainesville, Florida, and some simple effective self-defense with peak performer member Mike Pace from New Jersey, and fun karate drills with Brad Jones from Newmarket, Ontario, Canada. Plus, as a bonus, we bring you tournament domination with Jason Tankson Borelli. In this collection of point karate fights, you can see firsthand why he is so dominant. Lightning quick technique and skill with both hands and feet has catapulted him to the top of the tournament winners list during the last several years. So this month, it's phenomenal retention, MMA blow drills, speed drills, the Quantum Leap Think Tank, and point karate domination, and you will see it all on the NAPMA Innovation DVD this month, so be sure to check it out. Next up is our resident marketing taskmaster, NAPMA COO Toby Milroy, with his plans for your successful campaign this month.
Hello, NAPMA members. This is Toby Milroy again with your Marketing Minute for January. And obviously, as we're ramping up for the new year and we're moving out of our holiday downtime, the new year represents an amazing marketing opportunity for us to really capitalize and attract a large influx of new students, both children and adult markets. Similar to the back-to-school season, we have a great opportunity to enter the conversation that a prospect or a prospective customer, prospective student, is already having in their head. And obviously, in the adult market, many adults are in the health and fitness goal-setting mode. And obviously, we have a huge responsibility to our communities. And I really think that we all need to take this very seriously as martial arts school operators. If we allow a huge flood of new members into the health clubs that are right down the street from our martial arts schools, we're doing them a huge disservice. We're doing our community a huge disservice. The average health club membership lasts 37 days in North America, which means the average American sets their goal on January 1st to lose 20 pounds. They go down and enroll in the YMCA or the local gym. They take 3 or 4 classes. They go to the weight room 2 or 3 times. They perhaps even, you know, buy the extra special water bottle. And then by February 7th, they've had enough. They get out of the habit of going. They get out of the habit of training. They lose interest. And in the average martial arts school, the average tendency is a huge multiple of that. in many martial arts schools, our average membership lasts over 12 months, 18 months, 20 months. Those are very successful schools that have extremely tight retention rates. But it's our duty to our community to help penetrate that market, those people who really do want to get fit, those people who need help attaining their goals. They're not going to get that help at the local health club. They're not going to get that help at the local YMCA or gym. They could get that help in our schools. My estimation is if you've bothered to be a NAPMA member and if you've bothered to take your business seriously, then you take your customer very seriously as well, and you take their well-being very seriously. And we know that if a martial arts student is actively engaged in our classes, if they've made a psychological commitment to our program, if they've made a financial and contractual commitment to our program, that we keep our students engaged in classes much, much, much longer than the local gym does. And therefore, our success rate is much, much higher than the local gyms is. I think the average gym member, if you paid your membership in full in January and stopped coming after February 2nd, I doubt the local gym would even bother to call you up. I doubt that they would even bother to send you a postcard or a miss you card or a birthday card. But in our martial arts schools, the more successful the martial arts school is, the more we focus on our customers. If a student is gone in our schools, if a student is gone for 3 days, we have an A-B schedule. And if a student hasn't come to class by Wednesday, we're on the phone to their parents, making sure that that they're coming to class on Wednesday or Thursday, or Thursday or Friday. So this is a dramatically different experience than people have in the health clubs. However, there is this huge vibrating mass of people that have a problem and want a benefit. And their problem is they're an extra 20 pounds overweight, and the benefit they want is a fit, healthy lifestyle that'll last them for the rest of their life. And we have the unique ability to provide that to them in a way that isn't going to get boring, in a way that's really going to challenge them to become a better person, not just a stronger body. So it's our opportunity right now to be in every media we possibly can. Obviously, direct mail is a great media for this time of the year. Families and parents and adults are having this conversation in their mind anyway. They know they want to get more fit. They know they need to be working out. We should certainly be in their mailbox. We should be in their email box. We should have our program directors calling everyone on our warm list to invite them to a special fitness camp, perhaps a special cardio camp, whatever it is, whatever types of specific marketing activity you can do to drive traffic into your school. But in general, the market at large is thinking about fitness. They're thinking about goals, and we have the opportunity to help them with that. So the action steps you should be taking are to find your targeted direct mail list, be in their mailbox every week or every other week for the next 6 weeks, have a very robust email campaign going to all of your email list, hold special seminars and special classes in your school on perhaps Friday afternoon, Friday evening, or Saturday afternoons that are focused on fitness, goal setting, and goal attainment, and you'll have an amazing influx of new students in your school. Also keep in mind that NAPMA is providing you with press releases and flyers and door hangers and ad cards and postcards. All of these can be targeted to this specific target market to drive an amazing influx of new students in January. So I hope that's helpful, and I really hope to see you at our next live event.
One of my expertise is marketing. I went to school for marketing. Didn't get my degree in marketing, got my degree in business. I was near my end of my college career and just asked them to give me whatever degree I was closest to. And at that time it was business, so I went that way. I've done a lot of trial and error in marketing, and one of the most important things is trying to keep your dollar per student low. Trying to get as many students as you can into your door without getting your advertising budget out over your head. Marketing is not a one-time thing. Marketing is an all-time, all-day, everyday thing that you need to do. You need to keep your name out there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, throughout the entire year. The key is to do everything you can, whether it's idea number 1, 2, 5, 50, do them all. You may put out 1,000 flyers and then do a direct mail and then do a cable ad. The student may come in from one of those three, but it's a combination of all three of those things is why they came to you. They may get the direct mail piece, go through, who gets money mailers or value packs in the mail? Hey, what do? You get them, you go through them, yeah, that looks good, you put this one over here, and then you throw the rest out, you have like three or four on the side, right? Then, those three or four probably sit there and you'll never use them. You get it again a few months later, you go through them, you do the same thing. Maybe you'll use them, maybe you won't this time. Then you'll see a flyer for that same thing, or you'll see an advertisement on TV for the same thing. And that's when you'll kick in, and that's when you'll do it. It's a combination. Marketing is a combination of things. You can't just do newspaper ads. You can't just do only flyers. It's got to be a combination of everything. Let's start right on the easiest one, which I'm sure everybody does, is flyers. Flyers. Keep it simple. Not a lot of words, simple picture, simple advertisement, whatever you're doing, something that's going to catch their attention. Don't jumble it up with words or all your credentials. That's what drives me crazy. It cracks me up when I see either phone book ads or flyers when it lists the instructor's 85 credentials. People don't care. People, when they see that, don't care about how many degrees you have, all these competitions you've won. It's great. Your average person in the street does not care about all that stuff. They want to know what it's going to do for them, what it's going to do for their kids, not how great you are. Number two, an A-frame sign. A lot of towns, everybody know what an A-frame sign is? It's one of those wood folding frames you put out by the street corner. They're very expensive. You can probably build one yourself if you're handy. If not, you can find someone to do it for you for a relatively reasonable price. Just something to keep your name and your logo out there that people are going to be able to see and recognize immediately with you. Just to touch on the logo, raise your hand if you think you have an easily recognizable logo. Okay, that's very important. You need to have a logo that people can spot on a flash and immediately associate it with your school. If they can't associate your logo with your school, then putting your logo out there doesn't do you any good. Think of all the important logos for big companies, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, all of those things immediately trigger a response to think about those. So you need to be able to do that with your logo. So if you don't have a logo that does that for you, you probably might want to think about changing your logo, because your logo should go on everything. Bumper stickers. Your students will eat them up. They'll want them on their cars. The students want to show off that they take karate. What little kid doesn't want to throw a bumper sticker on the back of his mom or dad's car to show off that they take karate classes or martial arts classes somewhere? Some of the parents won't like it. I won't put one on my car. Guest passes. Most of these first things most of you guys are doing, it's kind of a reminder to just keep doing them, and you're doing the right things just to keep working on them. Guest passes. Give all your students guest passes. Bumper stickers. The name of your school and your logo very large, and then you just maybe your phone number. Putting too much information on a bumper sticker is not necessary. No one's going to speed up behind another car to try to see, what was that address and phone number again? Throw your phone number on there for fun. Your goal is to get your name and your logo out there. It's just the name recognition that you're shooting for. The guest passes, hand them out everywhere. Leave them everywhere. You go to a restaurant, leave them on the table. We'll get to some other ideas for your guest passes after. Always have them on you. I'm sure every one of you has bumped into somebody somewhere that, I have a 5-year-old kid. I was thinking about getting him into karate. And you could give them a business card, but it's different to hand them a guest pass and say, here, bring them on down. It makes a big difference. Business cards for your students. Raise your hand if you have a laser printer at your facility. Okay. If you don't have one, get one. They're relatively cheap. You can get paper that's already cut up to make business cards. When a student signs up, print them up 50 business cards. Black belt in training. They could hand those to their friends. On the back of that, you could have it printed, good for 2 classes or good for a free introductory lesson. The students are going to love to have them. They're going to love to show them to their friends, black belt in training. Speak every month. You should be involved with all of these programs, or as many of these programs as you can possibly get involved in. Your PTA, your Chamber of Commerce. Chamber of Commerce usually have breakfast meetings once a week, big meetings once a month. If you get in good with them, you get to speak in front of all these businesses on a monthly basis. The DARE program, MAD, SAD. The more you speak out in public, the more your name gets out there, the more the name of your school gets out there. I don't care so much about my name getting out there. I want the school name out there. When I introduce myself, if I leave here and none of you remember my name, doesn't bother me. Just remember my school name. I don't care about that with you guys. But if I was in front of a group of the PTA, I want them to remember the name of the school. I would keep repeating the name of my school and what my message is. My name doesn't matter, unless my name was the name of my school. Okay. Broadcasting music, inside and outside. How many of you play music during your classes? Great. Excellent. Pipe that music outside if your landlord doesn't mind. Put a speaker to the outside and pipe it right through. It draws attention. People hear music, they follow it, they go over and check it out to see what it was. Something very simple, very cheap, it'll draw some attention, might get someone to walk in to see why you're playing music. Outdoor classes. If you have room on your sidewalks or in your parking lot, have the students leave their shoes on, maybe hold a basic part of your class in any visible area outside. People love watching that. They'll come by, they'll stop, they'll watch the group. It's just a way for people to see you, make sure everybody's got a nice big logo on the back of their uniform. Put some kind of sign next to you so people know what you're doing and who you are, just to get your name out there more and more. Flyers or guest passes, like I mentioned earlier, in your local bills. I have a local electric company that's right around the corner. The cable company's right around the corner. Anything that's a local bill, drop a flyer in there every month. Machines don't open these up. People open these up. Person who might be opening up that letter might have two kids that live in the same community. Maybe they don't, but it really didn't cost you much to throw that in that bill. Might even give them a good laugh. Press releases. I'm sure all of you have heard about press releases. Your local newspaper, if you're advertising with them, will allow you to do press releases pretty often. That's an opportunity that you need to take advantage of. You need to do that as often as you can. If you submit one to them once a month and you're running advertising with them regularly, they'll run it. They don't want to lose your business. They're going to let you do that. A press release is important because people read that as an article, as news, not as an advertisement. That's a different type of message that they're getting. They're saying, that looks like you're part of the community. They're writing this article about you, even though you're giving it to them and you're actually writing it yourself. Most people don't see it that way. They're taking it as news, and it's getting your name out into the community. Continuous video in your window. That's a short infomercial, I call it. We have a 7-minute infomercial that we run on a loop. It's a very high energy, exciting, motivating video. Put it on a TV, turn the TV around, stick it out the window, and it just keeps looping and looping and looping. People are walking by. We're in a strip mall, so it's easy. We have a lot of traffic of people walking by. It'll catch their attention. They'll see the video. They'll stop. They'll watch. They might want to come in. It's very inexpensive to do that. Okay, cold calling from mailing lists. Anybody in here do cold calling? Pick up the phone book and just start calling people randomly. Let's close your eyes and hit the phone book. You could actually purchase specific mailing lists. You can call companies and get, I want all the people in my area that earn over $30,000 that have two cars with two kids. And you can get that specific mailing list. You can mail them a flyer and then follow up with a phone call, something like that. Parent Day. I'll be talking about this more in internal promotions. Parent Day. Just have a parent day. Bring the parents in. Get them involved in the school. Try to sign them up right there. I'll get more into that I'm not talking in here next, but the one after that, internal promotions, and I really go into how to run a successful parent day, a buddy day, and a sibling day. Okay, give away gift certificates to auctions and fundraisers. I get phone calls all the time from churches, youth groups, that they hold auctions or fundraisers to build money up for their community. Give away gift certificates, 3-month gift certificates, 1-month gift certificates. Give them 5 of them. And they use them to raffle off. People are auctioning on these gift certificates that you're giving them, and it'll bring people in there and get your name out there. Okay. Cold called from the phone book. I went to cold call for mailing lists. Local recreation programs as a feeder from a YMCA or Boys and Girls Club. We do this every chance we get. I do them for free. I do not charge a dime. We run a program in the Boys and Girls Club at our Salem school. We run YMCA programs at our Reading school, as well as a program, another class with the DARE program. The DARE program pays my instructor that goes to do it $25 a class. I don't want the money from it. I want the students. I want the kids turned on, and then I bring them into the school. The way we get them into the school after they do one of the rec programs is by holding an exam. We usually run anywhere from a 6 to 10 week program. I like the shorter programs much better. And then we'll bring them in and test them. Give them a certificate, test them for a white belt, but they have to come to the school to test for their belt. When they have to bring their mom and their dad to come for the test, and then we hit them up for the sale right there. We'll offer some kind of special rated discount for them when they come in that day. Maybe we'll void the down payment on our program.
We're all using punishment in one form or another, whether it's, a downward glance, like, what are you doing, or I want you to go sit in the corner. And there are absolutely going to be times when punishment is necessary and important because you need to stop a behavior in its tracks because it's dangerous or problematic, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But what I want to put into your minds first off is that there are side effects to using punishment. Punishment as something that stops behavior and changes it, as opposed to using praise to encourage good behavior. So anything that you do to stop a behavior is considered a punishment. Some of the problems with punishment is that, in fact, it's not that effective. It doesn't work that great. It temporarily suppresses the behavior you don't want to see, whether that's, the little kids in my class digging at my mat with their fingernail, pulling up big chunks so that now I've got to buy a whole new section, or I see a kid, haul off and sock somebody else in the back of the class. Unfortunately, if all I do is punish right at that moment, stop that out of the class, I stopped it at the moment. But tomorrow, he's going to go right back to dig in on my mat. He's going to go right back to the back of the class and punch the kid in the face because he didn't get to do it yesterday. It's a temporary change. And similarly, the effects are short-term. They're inconsistent. You never know how effective it's going to be. And it's very limited. It's limited to this setting. Again, I teach you not to punch another kid in the face in the back of my class, but you go out into the schoolyard, that kid's still going to go haul off and punch somebody because you've only shown him, no, you don't do it here, you don't do it now. He may not know that that translates into you don't do it ever. Similarly, punishment only teaches kids not to do, like we talked about with being specific with praise and reinforcement. You need to show them the other side. Okay, so if I can't sit and scratch in your mat, what am I supposed to do with my time? What am I supposed to do with my hands? What am I supposed to do with my feet? You need to sit quietly. You need to sit hands folded. You need to focus your eyes on the instructor. When you are angry or upset with another student, you need to come and talk to me. Similarly with adults. If you have an adult who's having a problem, a personality clash with another student, and they're dealing with that by being hostile, by being angry, kicking them out of your class is one option. Giving them some sort of punishment is one option. But does that really give them the resources to solve the problem better the next time it comes along? Because I guarantee you, it's going to come along again, because you haven't really changed the nature of the problem that you have there. Especially any kind of physical punishment, there's a really high likelihood that it will lead to increased aggressiveness and a lot of negative emotions. Students feel angry, they feel resentful, or they feel guilty, worthless. They may pity themselves and feel sorry for themselves. All of those things really undermine the positive energy that you want going in your school. You want a lot of motivation, you want a lot of excitement, you want a lot of pleasure. All of those negative feelings create negative energy, brings your whole class down. Won't just bring that one student down. Because once the other students have seen the punishment and they've seen how crestfallen this other student may feel, they begin to worry about, what if I'm next? I don't really know why this kid got in trouble. What if I do that tomorrow and I'm the one who gets sent to the corner or whatever it is that happened? Another thing that you may be familiar with is that students may learn that they can act up when certain people are around, but not when other people are around. So if you have assistant instructors or other people who take over your classes, they may come back to you and be like, they are like wild animals with me. I don't know how you do it. And you're thinking, I never have a problem. Well, because if you're the one who's giving punishment pretty consistently, and instructor X over here isn't using punishment, kids know, hey, when substitute teacher's here, we go wild. Nothing bad happens to us. Just like, you know, we were all in elementary school, we know what that's about. So when you're not teaching those general principles that help kids organize their behavior and help your adult students too organize their behavior, that's the kind of thing you get. You get this very inconsistent pattern. Other worst case scenarios, you know, kids may leave your classes. Again, this is true for adults too, but I think I'm thinking more of children right now. They may feel really uncomfortable. They may want to lie to you, say, no, I didn't do that. They may quit your classes. So you may get all these other negative behaviors as a result of them being punished. And finally, you know, punishments can really make your students afraid of you. But I hope it's not a goal of anybody here, because the fear, the anxiety that that produces really undermines learning. It really undermines the kind of connections and bonds that we want our students to have with the instructors and also with each other. So, of course, as I mentioned before, I know that there are going to be some times when you need to punish, when you need to make it really clear to a student that what they're doing is wrong and you need it to stop right away. When might that be? Absolutely, if there's any danger involved. If a student is endangering themselves or anybody else. And when I say endangering, I would really like you to remember that that doesn't just mean physical danger. It doesn't just mean, you know, bare-fisted brawling. If they are insulting, if they are humiliating, if they are disrespecting, if they are abusing one another, again, adults and children. Adults can do that to each other in very subtle ways. It's something important to look at. It's something important to think about in terms of the gender distribution of your classes. How do the male students treat the female students? How do the female students treat the male students? How do instructors, you know, around those gender issues treat each other? Very clear that you don't want any kind of harassment, insult, degradation to be going on in your school. That I consider to be endangerment as well as physical violence. Those are things you need to stop in their track. Or when a behavior is so disruptive to the class that you can't teach, other students can't learn, there's chaos, nobody can hear what anybody else is saying, everything is so disorganized. You may just need to put a stop to things right away just to regain control and move on. And again, if there's harassment or abuse. Before you decide though, and I know I'm dragging this out as if you were going to go back into your office and sit and, you know, write yourself a little note and think about it, I know this all happens in a split second, but to keep in the back of your mind, you also want to assess for yourself, who is this student? You know, what's an appropriate reaction that I should have to what they're doing? How old are they? Is it really reasonable for me to expect them to change what they're doing? You know, is this a coordination problem? Is this a learning disability? Is this a child that's just much more immature than the other kids in the class? And what I really need to do is move them into my younger age group where they're going to fit in much better and not be, you know, bouncing all over the place and getting in everybody's way. What else might be going on? Again, adults as well as kids. Is there something going on in this person's workplace? Is there something going on at home? Is there something that's making it so they can't concentrate, so they're talking out of turn, so they're getting a little heavy in the sparring and making more contact that you like? Maybe you need to start to assess, well, you know, gee, this guy isn't usually like this. Maybe something's going on outside of the classroom that I need to take into consideration before I take him or her out on the mat and give him a hard time. Again, you know, I think it's something we think of more easily with kids. What's going on at home? What's going on in school? Why did they come in today so totally off the wall? When there are outside factors at work, punishing that behavior might just exacerbate your problem. It might just make a kid who's already stressed out and anxious feel worse about themselves. It might make an adult who's feeling aggressive just feel more angry at you or somebody else. So it's a good policy to sort of do a quick assessment of what's going on, maybe make a decision, okay, instead of some sort of punishment, you just need a cool down. Or maybe we need to shift the whole class into a different activity so this person's issue or problem isn't going to be exacerbated. And finally, as a general rule, the smaller the problem is, the less need there really is for punishment. If instead, for example, I think you know the classic example most people can relate to is you've got a really disruptive kid in your class. You've got a kid with that little mischievous glint in his eye who's just looking for the thing to do that's really going to rile you. You can punish him or her. You can punish him again. You can punish her again. You can take him out. You can sit him down. You can put him everywhere. Or you can put him right front and center in middle of your eye's view so you see everything that they do. You watch everything that they do, and they know it. And every time you see them do something good, you tell them. Every time you see them focused, attentive, doing what you want them to do, you say, great job. Excellent. I like your focus. I like your attention. Good kick. Good bow. Come here. Help me demonstrate. You reinforce and reinforce and reinforce to death. And from personal experience, my husband and I will tell you, we've created a transformation I never would have expected possible in some kids because we were able to give them that focused reinforcement for what was good. They no longer got rewarded for what was bad. They didn't get attention for doing the chaotic, disruptive stuff, but they got tons of praise and reward for being an excellent student. And that changed everything. Took time, but I think it was nicer for us as instructors to be able to give praise instead of giving punishment. And I know it was nicer for this kid. And this was a kid that we heard from parents and other people, oh yeah, yeah, he's like this everywhere. He's like this in football, he's like this in baseball, he's like this in school. And because of the structure of the martial arts classroom, we were able to set it up so that he could succeed and catch him when he was being good and give him a lot of praise for that. So if you need to punish, what are you gonna do? There are acceptable forms of punishment and there are unacceptable forms of punishment. Things that I think you folks probably use all the time. Again, we use our words more than we use anything else. We use a verbal reprimand, and I'll talk a little bit more in detail about that in a second. Telling them, saying, no, stop what you're doing, I don't like that. Just expressing your disapproval. Generally, I'm sure you do it every day, if not with the people in your class, then you know, with your spouse or your partner, probably. Allowing children to make amends. Using the punishment as an opportunity for the child to rebuild whatever the relationship is or whatever the object is that they may have damaged when their behavior was a problem. So an example might be a student destroys some part of another student's equipment. They've pulled the mouthpiece apart, they've done something else. Well, maybe punishment needs to be, after you stop them and you make them discontinue what they're doing, you need to repair this. You need to take it home and talk to your parents about how you can replace what was lost. That accomplishes a bunch of goals. It's a punishment, it's not something a kid wants to do, it's not fun, but it also allows them to regain the respect and esteem of the other person that they wronged. It allows them to feel like, okay, I can do something wrong, but I can also fix it. I have the power to control my relationships with other people. It's a bigger message than just repairing the piece of equipment that got broken. Losing privileges, that's something we do a lot. We do it with children as well as adults. If you don't conform to the rules of the school, if you're doing something that's inappropriate, then you're going to lose something that you might value. You might lose the opportunity to spar. You might lose the opportunity to do a favorite drill. You might lose your place on our leadership team in our school because we want you to be a role model and you failed to show us that you were able to do that. Again, though, you can do this and then you can make amends. You can say, you know what? I'll give you the opportunity to get back on our leadership team if you do X, Y, and Z. I'll give you an opportunity to, you know, regain your place, your status in the school if you help me clean up after the class is done for the next week. You can make amends. You can repair the damage that you did. I can't tell you how important that is to self-esteem, adults and children, the ability to know that you can repair damage that you've done to a relationship. Timeout. Timeout is sort of part of everybody's language these days. Parenting people use it, psychologists use it, and I know that all the martial artists I know use it as well in their school. Basically, what time out means is time out from reinforcement, time away from what was rewarding. So you want to take the child or the student away from whatever it was that was rewarding them from the negative behavior that they were doing. If they were cracking jokes and they were making stuff up and other kids are laughing, that's rewarding. They're having a good time. You need to take them away and out of that. Two ways of using this are called, one way of describing them is sit and watch and sit and think. You may need to take a child out of the regular class context and have them sit on the side. And that might be for a brief period of time. Timeout does not need to be lengthy. If there's a negative behavior going on and you need to give a student a timeout, it can be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, doesn't have to be the whole class, unless it's a very, very severe problem. Brief timeout, very effective. for a moderate kind of infraction, a little disruptive behavior that you really need to gain control of, a sit and watch is very effective. I want you to observe the role models in the class. I want you to look and see what you need to be doing instead of what you were doing. And again, being specific, describing, you know, you were looking at the back of the room when the instructor was speaking. You were punching when you should have been kicking, and now you've injured someone, et cetera, et cetera. Be descriptive, have a sit and watch, and then they're able to rejoin the class. A sit and think might be for a more serious infraction where you need to remove the child completely from the classroom, have them outside, and have an opportunity for them to sit and think about what they did. Ideally, then, if you've got an assistant instructor or someone you can go out to sit with them after they've been alone for a while and process it. What did you do? Do you know why you're out in sit and think? Do you know what's the problem with that behavior? Do you know what you could do differently the next time? Or what will you do when you go back into the class? Again, assess the knowledge. Assess what's going on inside the child. If all the child can tell you is, I feel really bad, you know, my instructor's mad at me, well, they haven't really learned anything except that there's something wrong with them, except that maybe they're bad people. You need to say, you know what? Your instructor was upset because of what you did. You did X. If you did Y, everybody would have a great time in class, and you'd be a terrific class member. Can you do Y? Well, yeah, I can do Y. Can you show me? Show me what that looks like. See if, especially for younger children, if they can actually display it for you, and they really understand exactly what they need to do to rejoin the class in a positive way. Okay, I said I was going to go into a little bit more detail about verbal reprimands. You can tell, you know, I think words are very important. And I think sometimes, unfortunately, all of us are guilty of being careless about the way we use our words. And we don't realize how much of an impact they have, especially when you're a role model and an authority figure for people. To have the greatest effect, though, if you want to give a verbal reprimand, you want to express your disapproval strongly. You don't want to equivocate. You don't want anybody to wonder, you know, is this okay or is it not okay? But without anger and without any kind of demeaning quality to what you say. You don't want to insult or disrespect. And particularly, you need to be attentive to your tone of voice and your facial expression, especially with children. You know, we all know when we're being disrespected, when we get, you know, the eyes rolled up in the back of the head and the posture of like, I could care less what you have to say. You may be saying very appropriate words, but if your body language, your facial expression, and your tone of voice expresses disdain, anger, a general put down and degradation, everybody's going to hear that loud and clear. And your very appropriate words are completely lost because the powerful communication is in the nonverbal expression. So you need to be really careful about it, and you need to train your assistant instructors, especially if you're using older children as assistant instructors, on how important that is, and to get them to show you how to do that. Again, state clearly what the child is doing wrong or the student is doing wrong. Tell them what it is that you want them to do. What's the correct thing? And also give a warning. Give a student an opportunity to correct without a punishment. Give them the opportunity to realign themselves with what you need them to be doing. And let them know clearly what the consequence will be if they don't realign. Again, to save their self-esteem, to save their sense of pride in themselves and their sense of self-control, giving them that opportunity is very important. If you move right in, take away the opportunity to make a correction, it then feels like, well, my instructor thinks that I can't, that it's not possible for me to be good or behave appropriately. Again, you know, in tone of voice, criticizing, scolding, overusing reprimanding, or reprimanding in anger can be really detrimental to your students. It can really lower their sense of self-worth. And so what that means is that you kind of have to choose your battles, that it may not be in your best interest to reprimand or punish every problem that comes up in the classroom. You need to think about, you know what, how significant is this? Do I want to really hurt my relationship with the student right now? Again, adult or child, same thing. You want to think about, well, what are the long-term consequences? Can I let this go? And again, the general rule of thumb is, if you can let it go without it hurting anybody, and instead of punishing, reward what the person is doing right, that in the long run is going to benefit you much more and benefit your students. I hope this goes without saying for everybody in here, and I'm going to assume that it does, but I would be remiss if I didn't talk about unacceptable forms of punishment. Corporal or physical punishment, in addition to being considered physical abuse and sometimes a legal issue in many states, is really an unacceptable form of punishment. punishment by use of intimidation or threat, or by humiliation or verbal put down. All of these forms of punishment are just going to do more harm than good. Whether you believe in them, whether it was the way that you were trained or your instructor was trained or not, to me is almost irrelevant, because what I know from educational psychology, from clinical psychology, from everything we know about educating adults and children is that you will reap very negative side effects from using these forms of punishment. You will have more aggression, more anger, hostility. No one will feel motivated. People will feel afraid and anxious about being in your classroom, and generally slowly become to doubt their own sense of self. I think some instructors, not just in martial arts, but in a lot of disciplines, feel that, you know, I motivate by making my student want to prove themselves to me. I want them to accomplish me not hating them, basically, anymore. They should earn my liking and my respect for them. And you may see the specific results of that. You may see good kicks, good blocks, good punches, but what you don't see is what's happening inside. What you don't see is what's happening inside that individual sense of self-worth, their sense of motivation, their sense of hopefulness about the future. Because even as the blocks and punches are getting better and better, the sense of self-integrity is getting smaller and smaller. And that's going to be a lot harder thing to repair over time than, you know, encouraging someone to, you know, fix their block, their kick, or generally improve their karate skills. Okay, guidelines now for using each of these strategies effectively. Again, if you can see that timing is obviously key. Just like you don't want to wait to reward, you don't want to wait to punish. The closer the punishment comes to the problem behavior, the more success you're going to have, the more effective it's going to be. Again, along the lines of self-respect and respect and esteem, you want to punish the behavior. You don't want to use those global good and bad kind of statements. What you want to do is stop a negative behavior, but you want to pave the way for something positive to come in its place. You know, you don't want to punish and then have the student leave your school. You want them to recognize, okay, what I did was not acceptable. This is what I need to do instead, and I feel really good about changing that behavior. And again, that positive message is so important. And in a way, this is, I don't think I can say it's more important, but it's certainly equally important with adults than it is with children. I mean, the problems that we run into with adults, I think, are more along the lines of, again, you know, difficulty in personality clashes in the school, a student who's very frustrated, very down on themselves, just like powering their way through techniques, feeling angry at themselves that they can't get it right, and feeding all that negative energy out into the class, maybe such that you can't teach. They're you know, griping and moaning about their lack of success so much that it disrupts the rest of the class. Those are inappropriate behaviors. An adult student who's got a chip on their shoulder, got something to prove, you know, really looking to hassle the other adults around them, also inappropriate behaviors. But adults are tricky, because if they get the feeling that you don't think that they're good enough, if on some level you don't believe that they can actually be successful, that's when they leave. That's when you lose them. You correct them and they're gone. Because on some level, they didn't hear like that subtext, they didn't hear that inside message that, you know what, what you were doing was wrong for the following reasons, or I have a problem with it for the following reasons. But basically, I know that you can do better. I have full confidence that you're going to be able to correct this. I don't doubt that. I'm just letting you know that that's what you need to do at this point. Adults really need to hear that message. And again, I think I've said this many times, you know, never punishing in anger, watching that sarcasm, that belittling tone of voice. Be clear and consistent. Again, particularly important with kids, particularly important if you've got multiple instructors in your school, that consistency. Once you've decided that X is not acceptable and I will punish it when I see it, you better be sure that all of your instructors are going to follow through with that as well. Because if you start to set up those kinds of inconsistency, you get a lot of problems. You get students who feel great when teacher A is there, but frightened when teacher B is there. Because teacher A never allows contact in sparring, teacher B is a little unpredictable. You know, I might get hit if I spar when teacher B is there. I don't like that. Don't use a weak punishment. This might sound contradictory, but if you've decided that something is worthy of punishment, if you've decided it's dangerous and you need to stop it right away, it is important to use a punishment that an individual will take seriously. So you need to use a timeout that is clear separation from the rest of the class. That's very meaningful. It's not just a punishment in name only. You know, the kid's sort of on the side, but he's really still part of everything. What will happen is if you use a weak punishment, it will be ignored. And then you'll have to punish again. And this time you'll kick it up a notch, and it'll be a little more serious. But it still won't be taken seriously because it's kind of the same as what just happened. Then you'll have to punish again, and it'll be stronger. And again, and again, and again, until you get to something that's really pretty significant. Now you're frustrated. Now you're into a battle of wills with your student, and you've ended up using a much harsher punishment than you ever would have had to use if you were clear, consistent, and used a fairly moderate intensity punishment to begin with. Again, following those guidelines of not doing anything that's going to be injurious or demeaning to your students. Another important point that I think often gets lost is that it's critical to let the punishment end. Don't hold a grudge. Whatever has been done, if it's not severe enough for you to expel your student from your school, once the punishment is completed and they have resolved whatever the issue was with you, they need to regain full status in your school. If they come back, whether it's coming back into class from a timeout or coming back after, you know, a hiatus or after having made amends in some way, they need to be able to feel that they have completely rectified whatever the problem was, that they have your respect once again, that the punishment and making amends was sufficient for them to return to their status. Otherwise, it's sort of as if they can never recover from that transgression. They can never regain face. They can never feel good about themselves again. And again, you have to be careful about how you communicate those things. Tone of voice, body language, facial expression, so important here as well, because you may communicate to the person, well, you know, I've let you back into class, but I'm not really thrilled about it. Okay, I just have one more, and then I'm going to take some questions. As basically a summary, punishment should always be a method of last resort, I think. Should you use it, you need to just remember these guidelines, that at the same time, you need to always be reinforcing what's desirable and communicating that. You need to be immediately, you need to be right in there, punishing at the beginning of a behavior so it doesn't escalate and get out of control. Have no anger or personal attacks involved. Be really clear and really consistent about what the problem behavior is and what it is that's negative about it. Moderate intensity, always encouraging restitution to regain mutual respect, restitution between students and each other, between the student and the instructor, between the student and the general school community, and allow the student to return to their formal status after whatever has happened has been resolved.
The Sounds of Success is produced in Clearwater, Florida. It is intended exclusively for members of the National Association of Professional Martial Artists and their staffs.